Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Well, welcome back to The Writer's Block right here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Jim Christina, in the studio right now with Bobby Jean Bell, my good friend from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Happy New Year, Jim. I haven't talked with you in, 2 weeks?
I know, huh? It gets a little lonely out there. It actually does. I just, you know, well, Happy New Year to everybody. It's I'm so glad that 2021 is here. And we don't have to deal with this stuff anymore. Well, at least for a while.
Different stuff. So,
well, you know, I can't find out, you know. So anyway, good to see you, Bobby. And I can't see you because, of course, your lovely face is on my Skype.
Yeah, well, it wasn't prepared to be on the camera today. You know, there's something wonderful about radio. You can do it in your PJs and, you know.
I know. Well, you know, I can keep saying every week I have a face made for radio, so. But, you know, I have to say a little something before we get going. This is something very exciting going on with Vuki and I. And if you're a writer and you're publishing independently, this is where you want to be. www.buyindiebooks.com can be your home for online sales and promotions. We can handle your sales, your shipping, and even your cash after the sale. The fee for the service is only 25%. 20% to buy indie books and 5% for shipping. So if you sell your book for $12.95, you'll get back $70 and you don't have to do a thing. All you got to do is just send the books. This is how you do it. You send in 5 copies of your work, signed, autographed, to us with your name, your selling price, and a detailed description of your story. That's it. And we'll do the rest. And we're looking to go live in March. So start thinking about now joining us in this terrific new adventure, and I'm really excited about this. Royalties will be paid every quarter, and so 4 times a year for those of you who need a calculator to figure that one out. You can't go wrong, and why don't you give it a shot? Because I think it's going to be a wonderful opportunity for a lot of the indie writers out there that don't know how to market their stuff. So that being said, I'm excited. I am.
We always have to have projects to get us out of bed and get us going in the morning, right?
I know. And, you know, we talk to indie writers almost every week.
Yeah.
And a lot of them say, where do I market? How do I market? Blah, blah, blah. Well, this is a good way to get started.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, you don't have to do nothing. Just send us the books. That's it. You're done. Yep. So anyway, tonight we have, oh my gosh, you guys, you and JR gushed over this guy for months. And months. And
we
months.
Did.
And I know, yes, you did. And I have to say that, you know, when we finally gave in and said, okay, we have an opening, let's get him in here. And we got him booked up, and he's here, and he's the first guest of 2021, and I'm so proud to have him on this show. So without any further ado, would you please welcome to the Writer's Block and 2021, Mr. Mark Edward Langley. Hey!
Well, I'm so glad to be here and glad you guys could find me a spot. This is great.
Well, you know, it just took a little bit of work, but we got you in.
That's a good thing, Ken. I can't wait to get going.
Well, we're going to get going right this second. You know, I just finished your book today. Mm-hmm. And it's spellbinding. It truly, truly is. Now, I haven't read the first one. I just read the one, Death Waits in the Dark. Which is a great phrase, incidentally. And I believe in the book, somebody's grandmother told him that, or grandfather said, Death Waits in the Dark, for everybody. And I thought, wow, what a great title, Death Waits in the Dark. And the book itself is just like, wow, so well written. The stories are so well put together. It's phenomenal. And it's one of those books that you start reading chapter 1, line 1, right after chapter one, and you just, you hate yourself for having to quit reading, to eat and go to the bathroom, refill your water. And, you know, you rush back and you grab the computer and you pick it up and you start going again. And it's just, it's one of those books that you can't stop reading. So I kudos to you, Mark. Kudos.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's one of those things, you know, where I normally try to write something that I will enjoy, you know. And if I was be reading it, I'd want to enjoy it myself. But a lot of twists and turns, and the person that quotes that "Death Waits in the Dark" is actually the chaplain from
the military,
Arthur's
right?
Military days, right. Yeah. Because one of my best friends from high school and growing up from when I was a kid, like 8 years old, ended up being a chaplain in the Army, and he's one of the persons that I talked to. Of my friends to kind of get a feel of what went on over there. So I'd know how to convey that best.
Well, you did a good job. The comment I have, and we talked about this right before the show went on the air, is that I could not pronounce a Navajo name or a word or a phrase to save my soul. But I'm Italian. That I can speak. But Navajo, I don't think so. But both of your books so far have taken place on the res. In the Navajo Reservation in New Mexico. And where did you get the idea to write about the Navajo?
Well, that's a funny thing that, you know, I've always had some kind of a kinship out there. You know, I think the first time I went out there was when I was 12 years old in 1972. My mom and dad and I went out there in his Galaxy 500, you know, and made the trip. And they introduced me to a lot of things out there, took me to a lot of places, Colorado, New Mexico, and so forth, you know, that it just kind of stuck with me over the years of growing up. And then when I got to be in my 20s, I thought about, well, I need to take a trip. I need to take a trip and get out of here and go do something. You know, I took a 2-week vacation and went back out there with the total thought process of, I want to write a book. Because I'd been wanting to tell stories all my life. My mom could have told you that before she passed away, you know. And I thought, this is what I want to do. I started reading Robert Parker and Mickey Spillane, you know, and John D. McDonald and so forth. This is what I want to do. So I went out there. And once I got there, down into that area, it just felt like I was home. Uh-huh. And that's the one thing that I had a connection with. Out of all the places I'd been, that's the only one that I can see myself living in, and hopefully we'll do that one of these days. But I could not get it out of me. So when I went out there, I actually rode the same path they take in the first book, Path of the Dead, and I dictated into a small Panasonic tape recorder everything I saw, smelled, heard, whatever struck me from Arizona up to Montana, and then came back and wrote all that down, transcribed all that, started developing characters and backstories for each character and so forth, and started writing the first book, and that led to the second book now.
Mm-hmm. And I understand you're working on a third?
Third one is done. And it's hopefully getting edited pretty soon here. I'm starting work on the fourth one. I actually have titles and outlines for six more after these, you know.
Wow.
So it's, I do things backward from what I hear from a lot of writers, is that all of a sudden a title will strike me in the head, you know, like, oh, that sounds good. I'll write that down. And I write those things down. And then when I get to them and sit down to look at it, I'll begin in my head to kind of create a story around the title.
Mm-hmm. You know, I used to do that when I wrote music. The title of the song would come to me, and exactly. It sounded really cool. So I would write it down and then go back later and you look at the title. You go, okay, what is this going to be about? You know, yep. So then you sit down and write the song. Like when I was Schillerman's daughter, Willa Schiller is the guy at the carnival who, you know, come into my tent, you know, come on here, tell me a dime. It's only a dime. Come on in, you know. And so I wrote Schillerman's daughter. And I have to congratulate you. And if I were sitting in front of you right now, I'd shake your hand. You're the one very, very, very second person on this show in 5.5 years that has mentioned the name John D. McDonald. And I have to say that Travis McGee is one of my very favorite characters in the whole world. his houseboat, the busted flush, and his electric blue Rolls Royce. Yep. I mean, there's no better character than Travis McGee at his 205, running on the beach with his, McDonald had a great character there.
Yeah, he did. It was fantastic. I started out like about 1980 when my parents moved to Houston, Texas. I got a job at B. Dalton Booksellers. It was a bookstore down there. They were nationwide at the time. And I started reading things in there because I was selling them, you know. And at that time in the 80s, Robert Urich was on television with Spencer for Hire, the TV show. And I loved the show. Well, a woman I worked with said, if you love the show, you will definitely love to read the books. Right. And I go, where are they? You know.
Yeah.
And I started reading those. And he was the first one that got there, read his stuff. I loved his stuff. Then I got into Mickey Spillane and McDonald, especially for Travis McGee. I could not believe how that – even I bought his Barrier Island book, too. And I read that, and that was amazing, too. But I started reading Hemingway and so forth, and I collect a lot of books, so I have a lot of first editions and hardcover, you know. But those four really just kind of set me into thinking that I could do this, and it kind of lit a flame, you know, inside me to do that. One of the movies that I liked that I really – it's a small film to me, that's not major, you know, but – And
oh, yeah.
I love that movie because
he's a professor.
Yeah, he's a professor who wrote this one great book, you know, and teaches this kid how about writing and so forth. For some reason, that really reached me on that level. And I can't not watch it when it comes on. I have to watch it every time, even though I know about it all these years down the road. You know? But it's one of those things that inspired me along with the authors that I mentioned there, because it's like, you know, those are the best teachers I could think of.
Yeah. Now let me ask you, because I mean, I'm a writer, and when you're reading, and then when you're starting to write and you're developing your characters, did you think to yourself, cause I did this, did you think to yourself, if I can write a character half as good as Spencer or Travis McGee, or even James Bond, which was actually a well put together character.
Yeah.
You know, if I can only do a character half as good as these guys, I got it made. You know,
I had hoped that, you know, I've had people read the two books I have out. One guy really flattered me. Two people actually flattered me. One was a reviewer on Amazon that gave me 5 stars for both books. And he said that he would put Arthur Nakai right up there with Walt Longmire and Joe Pickett. And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute now. You know,
Well, Walt Longmire obviously is a great character. I mean, Craig's been, you know, he's a good friend of yours, and Craig's been on our show 3 or 4 times. And, you know, he's a good friend of our show. Mm-hmm. And, you know, his character, Walt Longmire, I mean, certainly, you know, just lives through the test of time.
Yeah.
Oh, Bob, yeah. Don't sit there like that.
I'm patiently looking for a spot to begin. And besides, the two of you are having such a great time. Everything I've thought to say would take us sort of on a different tangent. But since we're talking about Arthur Nakai, Arthur and Sharon, his wife, a very interesting couple. And when you describe your own travels through the Four Corners and how you kind of, you know, talked into a tape recorder and all, Arthur experiences the landscape in a way that is so unique. And as a reader, we can smell it, touch it, taste it. And you take us into areas that probably the tourist or the, you know, person that doesn't really know where they're going would never see. And you also make a comparison right off the top to New Mexico and Afghanistan. Talked about a bunch of different stuff. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Arthur and Sharon and maybe how you saw that connection, which is very important in this book, the connection between New Mexico and Afghanistan.
Well, I sat down to create the whole situation of the book, and I wanted in the second book to show, because Arthur mentions it in the first book, but I wanted him to bring the reader into his past life of what he used to do. And the whole subject matter of bringing it in with the PTSD and Arizona or New Mexico is like, you know, there's desert. And mm-hmm. being in both, he grew up in this one here. You find out about his childhood in this book and how he grew up and the things he had to do and how he never had, like, you know, electricity until he got in the military, you know. And I sat down to comprise what I was going to do. So in the beginning of the book, the person who is in takes over the first chapter there is reminding himself of, he feels like he's back mm-hmm. there. You don't know really kind of where it is, but you kind of think it is. But desert's a desert, you know, and it just depends on what part of the world you're in with that. So I've been pretty much in every place that I describe in the book. I've been there. I'd say 98% are real locations and 2% are fictional locations because I could have a little more leeway with what I want to do there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you really can't kill somebody in a major hotel, you know, but it takes it around a different path. But I wanted people to understand the history of Arthur a bit and Sharon. Each book is going to be different. They're going to be like a standalone kind of book of story. Mm-hmm. But there will be a thread that runs through each one mm-hmm. that you don't have to read them in order. But if you do, you'll pick up on that thread and you'll see it explained as things go on, you know. So mm-hmm. I wanted to have that correlation with the PTSD and being in the military. And I talked to one of my friends about that. I sat down with him for a few hours one night and we discussed things and I learned a great deal. You can research what you want to research, you know, but when somebody tells you firsthand certain things, it really hits home for you. It hit home for me, understanding what they go through. I wanted to kind of make sure I portrayed that honestly and, get the point across without kind of beating somebody over the head with it.
Well, and it was interesting, too, that you that Sharon believes that she may be suffering with PTSD as well, even though right. she doesn't have a military background. But she comes out of book one. So I thought that it was wonderful how you didn't data dump. We got all kinds of things about book one, enough of teasers that we would want to go read it, which I did after this book. But it, you know, life is connected, like you said, a thread. And so I appreciated that there was a thread from one to two, because these characters, their lives were impacted in the story in book one. Mm-hmm. And as what they come out of this book, you know, would is also part of their life experience. So I thought it was very interesting and really great as a reader, how you, connected the books, and I thought it was so interesting that Sharon was, because mostly we think about PTSD as kind of being something that veterans are dealing with, but that actually...
Well, once you've gone through a traumatic experience, you're likely right. to have PTSD, yeah. it, exactly. not just combat, it's yeah, any it just, traumatic experience.
It just exactly. doesn't get the kind of play it should.
Hold that thought. We are going to take a real quick break. You are listening to LA Talk Radio. This is the Writer's Block. And right now, we're going to get a real quick word from LA Talk Radio. Hi, Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. And you know, in these days of coronavirus and COVID-19, as you're sitting home at your desk doing your job, how about instead of watching reruns of Lassie and the Lone Ranger, you tune in to www.latalkradio.com and listen to what our hosts have to say during the day. We've got everything from sports to music to self-help to, well, we even have talk. So why not give us a try during the day, latalkradio.com. And remember, every Thursday night, 6 p.m. Pacific, right here on LA Talk Radio, is the Writer's Block. Have a great day. And we are back. We are in the studio with Mr. Mark Edward Langley, author of some wonderful characters, of course, Arthur and Sharon and all of the people surround him in his little world out there in the Navajo Reservation in New Mexico. I can't even do it. Anyway, if you want to call and talk to Mark tonight, I have no idea what the number is. So I said 323. I don't know.
I should have it here somewhere.
I know. It's like, you know, okay, anybody know what time it is? I have no clue.
Oh, my.
Oh, yeah, I know. Well, you know, this is live radio, so it's liable to happen. You just never know.
Here we go. 323-203-0815.
There you go. 323-203-0815. And you can call in and talk to the real live Mark Edward Langley right here on LA Talk Radio and, of course, the Writer's Block. Okay. When you thought of these characters, and I'm sure you gave some thought as to the backstories I found amazing, because being a veteran also, I really relate with PTSD and with combat fatigue and all of this stuff that Arthur's going through. And you think to yourself, golly, did Mark know me? Did he write about me? You know, yeah. And it's like, and I'm sure more than one veteran is going to read this book and think the very same thing. Mm-hmm. I have to ask you, what is the background? You're sitting up against some kind of a background, and that looks like,
His screen, that is a journalistic thing.
What is that?
Just something I chose.
Dystopian something.
Yeah, not purposeful at all.
Yeah. Be better than staring at a light above my head, you know? Yeah.
Talk a little bit about your Navajo, because it's a huge part of your book. And we asked you before we went on the air, we had a little chat about your Navajo and everything else. And I, at the time, I asked you, where did you come up with the Navajo language? And you had a great answer. So if you wouldn't mind sharing that with our listeners.
Well, wanting to have everything centered around the Navajo people and Arthur being Navajo himself and his wife Sharon being Navajo and all the characters pretty much related to them. Back and forth are all Navajo people. I wanted to be able to have the language in there so it could be intimated in there with somebody's choice words or choice things that would make it sound, you know, more colloquial and really kind of convey what Arthur and Sharon feel sometimes about each other. So I went and I got a conversational Navajo dictionary. And I do rely on some people that I have out there as friends that are Navajo. I'll talk to them or get them on a messenger chat or something. You know, I'll ask them, how would I pronounce this or how would I say this? I was trying to find out how Arthur would be in relation to Margaret's two sons in the second book as like a godfather. So I contacted one of the people I know. I said, how could I shape that? How would I say that in Navajo? And he referred me to his grandmother, but you know, we did get it figured out, you know, but I like the fact that I don't want to have it overly a part of it, but just insinuate with a few choice words or a few choice sentences, you know, to get things across in that wonderful language that it is. It's very difficult. It will take me a long. I have no life left to learn it.
I was just going to say, reading the book, getting to these Navajo words, I came to the conclusion that you have to be able to turn your tongue upside down.
And your eyeballs, because
there's no way a white guy is ever going to say this stuff. But there you are. I mean, you're writing it, but still.
It's good to be able to refer to things, because I don't just use one source. I'll use three or four different sources to make sure I'm getting it correct. Uh-huh. Because like one of the people I interviewed a few years back for the second book, we were talking about Navajo and how I feel about them and being out there. And he looked at me across the table and he says, maybe you were Navajo in a previous life.
I'm like,
I don't know. It's a possibility, because, you know, there's just a connection I feel out there with that. And I try not to, in my writing, beat people over the head with things. I want to show things that they're dealing with on a day-to-day basis that affects them, but I want to show different points of view of that. So it's not just all one thing, here it is. there's different points of view and let the reader decide for themselves than what they want to believe.
Uh-huh. Now, you this book, I suppose, could be classified as a Western of sorts. It takes place in the West, in New right. Mexico, in the modern times.
Yeah.
We have mention of their horse owners and the wide open spaces. And, you know, I've been in New Mexico. I've seen New Mexico. I don't live there, of course. I'm an Idaho guy now. But it just seems that if you want to, it's like the Sheriff of Cochise in the old TV show in the 1950s. It was a Western, but it wasn't a Western. It was a modern show about Cochise County in Arizona. Mm-hmm. So I kind of get that off of this book. It was kind of like done in Western style with Western thought, but actually in modern times with mm-hmm. modern people. I may be way off, but that's what I got out of it. So, and your mysticism is phenomenal.
Oh,
when he rolls his Bronco and he goes into his dark place and he starts seeing the spirit people, and oh man, I had to reread that like 3 or 4 times just because wow. I wanted to get the full impact of it.
Well, I'm glad. Yeah,
the first mother, the first father.
Yep. Yeah. I wanted to, my thought process of, okay, I've got him in this situation and how would I bring him back? You know? Uh-huh. And, I started going through my reference books I have here on Navajo. I hate the word mythology because to them it's truth, you know. Mm-hmm. And I started reading through that and I go, okay, what if I take him then on this journey from the first world to the second world, the third world to the fourth world to back to this world?
Uh-huh.
And then you start hearing things in the hospital room around there and so forth, things come into view, you know. And that was one of the best ways I wanted to bring the culture and his history to the reader and then get to where I wanted to be back in the present day. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was a good way to mix that around and hopefully kind of, you know, enlighten people and show them different things. And I wanted people to love the characters, and everybody who reads these books tells me they love the characters, you know?
Oh yeah.
And my wife loves the police captain, Jake Villagoy, which I based on my own grandfather, big barrel-chested man, you know? And it's one of those things that I want people to love him. They do love him, and I'm glad because I love him as well.
Yeah. They become real, don't they?
They do. I've listened to some interviews you guys had. The last one with Hank Phillippe Ryan there, you know, and I went through and I could equate to what she was saying sometimes. Because I'll sit down and I'll write, outline a chapter and chapters down the road. I know where I'm going, but inevitably, while I'm writing, a character will take that over.
Yep.
And I'll end up in a totally different place
yep.
that I was going in the first place, but it's better.
Always. And they know what they're doing and you don't.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's like if I'm writing a section with Arthur and somebody else or whatever it may be, their personality comes through. And when their personality comes through, it just takes over. They say things, they do things. Things happen that I necessarily hadn't planned, but it works out better that way.
Yeah, I'm actually going to let Bobby Jean talk here in a minute, but I wanted to make one observation before I did, and it's I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to say that the bullet coming through his Bronco, shattering the plexiglass and putting plexiglass in his face and his shoulders, that was something that came up with the character telling you that's where it had to go.
Yeah. Yeah. I was writing that and I had I thought about using different roads and so forth, but I didn't want to use a real road and I wanted to be able to manipulate things the way I wanted them to. And then as they were having their conversation, he and his uh-huh. wife, all of a sudden it just hit me and I just.
Exactly.
Boom. There you go. You know, yeah. And then the whole thing, losing control and tire and going across and hitting the berm and flipping over it. Just, you know, that's in that way. Yeah.
Let's go.
I'm guessing this is time for the At West Shop ad.
I am guessing you were probably right on the money. So you're listening to LA Talk Radio. And right now, we're going to have a very live commercial for Miss Bobby Jean Bell and Out West.
Looking for a great read for your long winter's nap? I recommend tonight's featured titles, Death Waits in the Dark and Path of the Dead by Mark Edward Langley. Easy to order. Just go to outwestshop.com, choose the books and CDs from the toolbar, and from the drop-down menu, click Shop Out West on bookshop.org. The Writer's Block book list features titles of our guests. Click a book cover for the link to our interview and to purchase. And check out the Out West Shop Facebook page every day for our featured book of the day. One-stop shopping supports Out West and independent booksellers when you purchase books through our bookshop.org affiliate website. And remember, it's always a great day when you're reading Out West.
It is. And it is now 6:30. We're back with our guest of the evening. Oh, man, I'm so glad you're here. Mark Edward Langley and, of course, Bobby Jean Bell and myself, Jim Christina. And if you want to call and talk to Mark, the number in the studio here is 323-203-0815. And again, write it down, 323-203-0815. That's Bobby Jean's old one. We used to do that in the studio, and he had a different number. And she used to say, write it down.
To write it down.
Write it down.
Can I ask?
Absolutely. Go for it.
Okay. So one of the other issues that plays throughout this book is fracking. And we don't need to get into that. What I really want to do, because you have developed a heart for the Navajo and for people living on reservations, for their landscape and for their traditions, and also for kind of what's going on in their everyday world. And it sounds like your next book, remind me the title again, When Silence Screams,
yes.
So I'm assuming that we have a burning issue that's come to your attention that's going to kind of star in this book. Am I right?
Yeah, like I mentioned, I like to have things that they're dealing with on a daily basis. And when I sat down and talked to a few of them there to interview them and talk to them, they liked that I was actually talking about things that they do live with every day. When Silence Screams first struck me, when all of the missing and murdered indigenous women that happened in the world, because what struck me first was, I, like a character says in the book, when some nice girl goes missing off a golf course, everybody knows about it in the press. But when it's any of a person like a Native American from U.S., Canada, whatever it may be, doesn't really get that attention that someone like that does. And what struck me the worst was when I read that in 2016 alone, 5,712 girls and women went missing in the U.S. and Canada. And I started delving into listening, watching videos of family members and so forth, and having little discussions like that, reading things about it. And what really struck me again was, you don't know names and so forth and pictures, but when you see all the flyers that are made of every person that goes missing, you get to know them. You know, you see their picture. It's not just a number put out there. There's a name to that number. There's a age, a hair color, eye color, that is out there that you don't see by just seeing a number. And the more I read about it, and I have to write about this because it does affect them. It's one of those things that is a daily thing. There, you know, white vans running around all the time, just taking people. They're there one day, they're gone the next, you know. And I wanted to write something really about that to enlighten people of what actually is happening on the reservations, not just Navajo, but all of them in the United States and Canada. And it really struck me as something that, to my heart, I really just, I said, I have to do this. And I developed a storyline of a missing 19-year-old girl, April Mendigoats, and Arthur having to try to start looking for her after she's been already gone for 6 months. Mm-hmm. And it's a very arduous task.
You have a really great website. To any of our listeners out there, there's links to radio, podcasts, and all kinds of great information. And you have a really terrific link to an organization, Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women USA. And you talk there, you know, about the situation. You also have a link to another nonprofit that supports firewood and such for Navajo elders, which mm-hmm. I thought was, again, here I am in New Mexico, but sort of oblivious. I know that, unfortunately, COVID numbers are just impacting reservation and Pueblo peoples like nowhere else in the state. But mm-hmm. I thought that was also interesting that you bring this group to our attention. And this is, again, a Navajo name. I would not be able to say it properly. It means firewood for grandpa in Navajo. But what is the name of that organization?
That's a good question. I haven't talked with anybody to spell it or say it myself. I'm not sure if it's She's for Shay or whatever. I'm not sure. It just was one of those things that I've heard about for the last couple of years, and I wanted to have something on my site that might lend people to donate for that. That does take time. It takes effort. In fact, one of the people that I met with a couple of years ago and talked with about things going on out there is part of that. And Bobby's out there doing a good job of that. And I wanted to make sure that, you know, people know about it. They can donate mm-hmm. on there to that, because, you know, that it's not, you're not paying for the firewood. You're giving money to the people that are working hard to get it to them.
Right.
Pays for food. It pays for water. It pays for gas, you know, whatever it may be to get that done. So I want to make sure that people understand that it's not, you know, what people may glorify and think of out there, but there are people that are living far off the grid, you know, and they're older, or there's multi-generational families in one home, you know, and it gets really cold out there, you know, so you've got to have firewood. I know during the time they lift the wood in the back of pickup trucks on trailers and so forth. In the third book, I do mention that the kid that Arthur has working for him is out doing that. But when he gets done with that, then he'll come and hang out with Sharon for a while. But he's out doing that. So I want to, it's the more I think people know what goes on out there and what the trouble is, what they need. It's not a bleeding heart kind of thing, but it's just honest to help, you mm-hmm. know, and mm-hmm. you want to help with situations like that, because it's not, people talk about third world countries and so forth with all these problems they have. There are places in the United States that have the same problems, you know, Appalachian Mountains in the east and so forth, out here in the west, and a lot of places like that that don't have running water. They don't have, you know, electricity. They haven't got heat. Like, oh, I can don't turn my furnace up. They mm-hmm. can't do that, you know.
Right.
And they need help with that. So I've donated to that and myself, and I hope a lot of people will see that and possibly take a link and want to donate.
Hey, Jim, do you see what time it is?
I see what time it is.
It's time for your question.
Oh, well, far be it from me to forget my question. Mark,
yes.
The name of this program is The Writer's Block. The question is, have you ever had writer's block? And if you have, what did you do to get out of it?
I would be lying if I said I didn't, because every writer goes through that. They all do. Sometimes I'll be going along and I'll have a great idea and then it just stops. And I'm like, where do I go from here?
Exactly.
What do I do? In fact, I actually have a mug that I have here that I bought that says writer's block, when your imaginary friends refuse to talk to you. But, you know, That helps right there to get that out there, you know. But it's one of those things where sometimes I just walk away.
Yeah.
You know, if I try to push something, it never really comes to fruition. But if I get up and walk, my dad told me, get up and walk away from something, go back to it later, you know. Yeah. So I will get up and leave it alone. I'll go do something else or focus on something else, because it's strange how a lot of ideas I get and a lot of thoughts I get. Thank God for the notes section on my iPhone, you know, because I have 400 and some odd notes on there of ideas that just pop into my head. I better put them down or I know I'm going to forget them. So I do that and I'll go through them periodically and see that I could use that. Yeah, you know, and I'll take some things from there and weave it into the storyline, you know. So it comes out that I'll get out of the writer's block because I'll just walk away and then come back and I'm fresh looking at the whole thing again. I may even reread the first chapters that I have up to that point, mm-hmm. and then I can pick it up from there after that. But everybody has writer's block. It's hard not to have that, you know. And I always laugh and I tell people, if anybody wants to see what goes on in a writer's mind, they need to watch the movie The Man Who Invented Christmas, you know, about Dickens, because I'm sitting there watching that. I go, yep, exactly. That's it. That's verbatim right there. Yes, you know, because the characters, it involves around him writing the Christmas Carol. And when the characters pop up in his workspace, his room, you know, or on the street, you know, yes, they do that. They are in your head 24/7. Yep. You can't get them out. They are part of you, you know. So when you sit down to write, they just take over. And when I have writer's block, so I'll just walk away and then I'll come back later and hopefully it'll be working. And if it's not, I'll do something else.
A credit to a great writer is when the character is in our heads as a reader too.
Right.
Exactly. And stays with us. And you have a villain in book one that sent chills up my spine from the first moment he entered the story. And he still haunts me. I don't know that
one. People have told me that, yeah.
Thank you for the character, but yeah. So I guess I have one question that may be helpful to some of our maybe new writers that are listening. I've been asking this one lately. Do you have any suggestions for how a writer can grow their imagination?
Oh boy, that is a great question, man. I don't really know, because my imagination has always been fanciful from a young age. I mean, I remember, you know, doing things in school, always getting in trouble for things and so forth, you know. But I think you have to either be schooled somehow in thinking a certain way, or just most of the great writers, I think, I'm not even considering myself great, but it's like, you know, that your imagination just has to be free, you know. You have to just let it go and think of things. So this is a strange thing here. Yesterday, my wife and I were having breakfast at a restaurant, and I heard these four boys talking about reading and how they love to read. This is their favorite person here. Oh, this guy, if you need a book, I can tell you a book. This is a great book, you know. So when they went to the bathroom, their parents were sitting there. I walked over to the mothers, introduced myself, and told them I was a writer, that I loved hearing young people like this with imaginations just talking about reading, you know. And they thought it was, you know, nice I stopped by and talked to me and so forth. You know, when they got up to leave, their mothers brought them over to our table and introduced me to them, you know. And they were all 10 years old. So you got four 10-year-old boys that love to read. And I says, that's great. You know, I says, you can't read my stuff for another 8 or 10 years, you know, but I says, I love the fact that you love it. What's your favorite writer? You know, who do you read and so forth? All this and that and so forth. And it's always like, you know, the Chronicles of Narnia kind of thing or so forth, mm-hmm. you know, but as they love reading. My wife says, well, what's it feel like to meet a writer? And he goes, they all, in unison, they all went, cool.
Very
It just made my day from that point, you know. But they, you have to have that imagination when you're young. And I got into the whole world of, you know, of working and so forth. And I started out when I got back up in Illinois here working behind the counter at auto parts store. Ended up being in the automotive field all my life. Ended my career 36 years later, being a division head for a company that did aftermarket automotive things. And then I finally got a chance to sit down and really work on what I wanted to do. So I love that my imagination being, my mother had a different word for it, but fanciful, I'd say, you know, of that. But it's, you have to have that. You have to have something just intrigues you enough that you just think up a lot of things. Some things don't work. Some things do work, you know, mm-hmm. but that gets weeded out as you develop as a writer, I think. So I can look at my very first book that I typed out on a Royal typewriter, you know, and had a case with it, you know, and it was terrible, you know, and that was back in like 1984, you know, but you look at it and you grow and you grow and just for some reason my imagination just took over and I started creating characters. And when you love them, you start. Arthur went through like 6 different name changes to get to where he was, you know. I mean, so things just didn't flow. Yeah. And when I start thinking up characters, good or bad, the names have to fit the character and the style that I want them to act. And they have to kind of flow when you're talking about them. Arthur Nakai, Karen Keone Nakai, you know, Jake Billigoti being the sheriff. It's all these things that I look and I try to have people that I know, you know, name wise, or I'll go through a list of names that are the major names that are out there. And one of the people on my publisher says, well, you know, Tony Hillerman has some people the same name. I said, well, you know what? There really is only a certain amount of names you can draw from,
yeah.
you know, and certain areas are prone to certain names. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things like that. But when you get into the creating of that, it just takes over. And mm-hmm. when your imagination goes, like I said, but I'm writing that scene about the truck, it just started to flow and just started to come out and things just happen. And then you like I joke, Hemingway always said, you know, write drunk and edit sober.
And edit sober.
You know,
oh, it was Hemingway that said that initially. Oh, we've had that quote before, but I don't think anybody credited Hemingway.
No,
we heard that from Tosca Lee.
Was it Tosca Lee?
It's Tosca, yeah. Hey, look, we're gonna hold that thought. We're at 6:45. We're gonna be taking another quick break here. This is LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Writer's Block. And right now, let's hear a little word about Creative Edge. Hi, Jim Christina from The Writer's Block here with some great big news. If you're an author or aspiring to be one, then you better check this out. Creative Edge, one of Canada's top boutique publicity firms for authors, is now expanding. They are dedicating themselves to promoting authors, indie and traditional, in all walks of life, all genres, and they're looking for all opportunities. Owned by Mickey Mickelson, Creative Edge has the passion, the contacts, and the knowledge to help authors and other artists build their brand and get their work noticed. You can contact Mickey at mickey.creativeedge@gmail.com to get started, or you can go to www.creative-edge.com. Dot services.
Wow. Okay. Enough for Creative Edge. All righty. Well, we are coming up to the end of the show, and Mark, I really have to say that it's been a hoot listening to you. And actually watching you in your backdrop, because that's really a cool backdrop. I have to make an observation when you were talking about characters running your life. I often thought what it would be like for somebody to be able to really get into my head when I'm in a writing mode. They would run screaming from the room because they would be yelling and saying, what the hell are you talking about? You know? There's so many jumbled thoughts up there at one time that, you know, it's really hard sometimes to sort them out and put them down on paper. It is.
There's a lot of times I'll be sitting on my phone. My wife thinks I'm on Facebook. And I'm writing things down. Mm. You know, I have ideas. I got to put them down right at that very minute, or I will forget them.
There. I also have to tell you that I was the vice president and CEO of a company that did reproduction classic muscle car parts.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And 100% complete steel reproduction body shells.
Oh, cool. Wow. Yeah.
That was big. That was big. Anyway, where are you going to be? What are you reading? Where are you going to be? What's your website? Golly, there's so many questions to ask you and so little time to ask.
I'll try to get through them all. Let's see. Right now, I'm reading Ann Hillerman's first novel, picking up from her father, Spider-Woman's Daughter. I haven't got a lot of time to read. I'm always working on something and doing things, you know, but I'll take a chance to do that and I'll read it. I'm about halfway through it now, you know. I read Craig Johnson, of course. I've read, I think, the first two of his books. I've got all of them that he's done. But that's what I'm actually reading right now is Ann Hillerman. And I love her work. I've talked with her. She actually did one of the cover blurbs for the second book, along with William Kent Kruger, did a fantastic one. Craig did a blurb for the first book. With some other ones, you know. I'm hoping to get CJ Box to do one for the third book with that and things. But plus, I'm reading that right now. As far as my websites and so forth, I mean, it's markedwardlangley.com, you know, markedwardlangley.com, one word there. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn from being my business days, you know. So it's, you can go to all those sites from my website. You can see all the previous podcasts and so forth I've done. Listen to those. I got a blog on there, a lot of different things. So hopefully it'll be able to, you know, get a lot of people going there and kind of learn about me and my writing.
Well, we certainly hope you'll come back and visit us.
I would definitely want to. Yes.
Yeah. It's unfortunately we are booked up probably through May or June at this point, but you know, there's always openings after June. So
get a hold of
the bookie and see if we can make that happen for you. Mark, thank you so much for joining us tonight. I know sometimes it can be a hassle, and we appreciate your time. So it's been wonderful having you. Well, thank you. Well, Bobby and I are like, we try to make you feel like a good friend. So
well, I feel that way. Great. I love watching you guys and talking to you guys. So it's fantastic.
Oh, good. Well, you know, we are cool. What can we say?
Well, too true.
Next week, we have writer and actor and activist and whatever, Chris Humphreys from Vancouver, BC. And he'll be with us with his book. What's it, The Hunt for the Unicorn?
It's the first book of the series. Really good. I'm sorry, Unicorn's in the title, but I've got all three books sort of in my phone ready to read. I've been reading book one.
Oh, have you? Let's see.
Yeah.
Here. It is called The Hunt of the Unicorn.
Okay, it is The Hunt.
Part of the Tapestry Trilogy, book one.
Yeah. Just think of the tapestry in the cloisters.
Right.
With the unicorn surrounded.
Right. Right.
And let your imagination go.
And he is with us next week, along with Henry Park, who is right at the moment busy interviewing Simon Windsor from Lonesome Dove and the Tom Selleck movies. And so we will be back with you next week at 6 p.m. Pacific, 7 Central and Mountain, and 9 o'clock at Eastern Time. So y'all have fun. Thank you so much for joining us. And for Bobby Jeamer, we are out of here. Thank you.